For so many of us, our lives have been touched by cancer in some shape or form. For me personally, I've had grandparents go through it, as well as my father, Gary Belenfant. Dad was my inspiration behind my recent experiences at the Stars of Western Sydney fundraising dance performance. And you can check out the show notes for a link to our very entertaining dance together when I hit the 3,000 fundraising milestone. Anyway, I've really admired how positive Dad has remained over the past 5 years and that he's reconnected with his love of painting. It's, ironically, something that was lost during his many years as a visual arts teacher. So today I'm bringing my dad onto the show to wrap up this month's theme of empowering stories. While we don't delve too deep into Dad's cancer journey during the interview, I've also included a link in the show notes to the video of him recently sharing his story. So yes, there's lots to check out in the show notes today. But for now, let's dance our way into the episode. Welcome to the Marketing and Me podcast. If you're eager to grow your health and wellness business, via effective marketing methods, while maintaining your own health and wellness, this podcast is for you. The show features a beautiful blend of guest and solo episodes covering marketing and business growth topics, as well as ways to improve your physical, mental, and emotional self. I'm your host, Leanne Shelton, and I run a health and wellness copywriting agency while also offering content marketing training. So whether you're keen to outsource or DIY, my team at Right Time Marketing is here for you. Either way, we'll ensure your message is seen and heard by your ideal client. If you're keen to connect, feel free to book in a free 15-minute chat after listening to today's episode. The details are in the show notes. And today, I have a very, very special guest, and that is my dad, Gary Belenfant. Welcome, Dad.
Hi, Leanne.
Hello, it's very exciting. I have interviewed before my sister Marissa, my husband Justin, and now my dad Gary. I've been talking about it for a little while. I've been trying to think of all these different ways I can bring my family members on, going, you've all got great stuff to share. And this month, it's all about empowering stories we've had. And so to end the month, because it's the 30th of May that this is being released, I thought I'd have to have my dad on because he has a really great story to share. Basically, we'll go into it shortly, but Dad has been battling cancer the last 5 years and winning. And a big thanks to that is his dedication to being creative and keeping up with his artwork and staying positive throughout all of that. So, I'm excited to do this, Daddy. And anyone who's been following me on socials recently, you would have seen a dance that Dad and I did for the Stars in Western Sydney when I hit the 3,000 mark in terms of fundraising for Cancer Council New South Wales. Dad and I did a dance together Can't Fight This Feeling. And it went basically viral, you know. Everyone loved it, and they all kept on. What kind of feedback did you get? It was like, oh, is that choreographed or something?
Well, that's the thing. They said, oh, how many months did you spend planning for it? And I said, we did it straight off. First off, I said, Lee and I have a natural, process of thinking and anticipating what the other person's going to do, and it. It's always paid off. In fact, both my daughters share that great power to communicate with telepathy, at least by the mind, rather than, oh, what are we going to do now? We know.
Yes.
By instinct.
Yeah, the strong intuition, yeah. I mean, look, having the camera facing us did help a little bit, I have to admit. Looking more practical side, because then I was like, oh, okay, I can see Dad's moving that way. Okay, I'll move that way too. But it was a lot of fun.
It's purely a genius thing.
Yes, we'll use the voodoo thing, yes. I'll just introduce you formally to everyone. So Gary Belenfant trained as a visual arts teacher at Alexander Mackie College of Advanced Education and the National Art School from 1974 to 1977. He majored in painting and was mentored by artists such as Alex Butler, Roy Jackson, Ross Jackson, David Voigt, and Terry O'Donnell. So Garriott taught as a teacher and then was a creative arts head teacher over a 37-year period before retiring in 2015. And then since being diagnosed with cancer back in 2017, Gary has been determined to remain positive. And I know I've had an impact on that. So during COVID and during lockdown, his art has certainly evolved to include a lot more mature and somewhat playful use of colour. And that's his words, not mine, but I do agree. I've definitely seen how your style has evolved and you've gotten more creative and experimental with the techniques and stuff. Like, and now, yeah, now using the black canvas, which is pretty cool too. So to begin with, can we go more into your artistic journey? Like why choose art? Why was that kind of your thing?
It's funny. I think even as a young kid, I mean, my first introduction to art, or at least feeling I can do it, was actually back in the days when Fred Flintstone came on TV. And I thought, it's interesting. I wonder if I could try copying it. And it was probably when I was about 7 years of age, I realised I actually had an ability to see something and then draw it, copy it. So for me, it was a lot of self-satisfaction building that I could create artworks. In primary school, I started doing very simple portraits of my colleagues in class, you know, as kids. And I didn't get much money from it, but it was a lot of fun knowing that it gave great satisfaction to the others, knowing that someone bothered to actually create artwork about them. Well, at least look like them, and it made me feel good, that made them feel good. And so it worked both ways. As I developed in my confidence, it was sort of funny. I wasn't initially going to do art as a subject at high school. It was only by a pure mistake on the school executive that somehow I was channeled into doing visual arts. I wanted to do tech drawing. I wanted to be an architect. But visual arts was something important to me. But then I found growing up that I enjoyed, or perhaps people enjoyed, me listening to them and me offering ideas, suggestions about how they can do better. But better, a good listener, but always a person who tried to make people feel good about themselves. And I guess when it came to the crunch, when I had to decide on a career, probably got off tangent, I apologise.
No, that's
fine. My parents said, look, you think about being an architect or civil engineer, but you do enjoy helping other people, and you are quite talented. At least that was to make me feel good. Yeah, I guess well. But nevertheless, I pursued that idea and thought, yeah, okay, I'll be a teacher. And you know what? It was the best thing I ever did, because the amount of pleasure you get out of seeing that little spark when a student says, "I can do it. I actually have artistic ability," and. It was one of those funny things where you had to sort of say, yes, you are. You mightn't do it like a photograph, but that's not important. But then they sort of said, oh, Mum and Dad think art's a waste of time. What's it going to do for me? And I said, well, okay, imagine all of us living in caves right now. Because essentially it was the artist who designed all these things we enjoy in life. So indirectly, your painting is helping develop your brain and to think beyond the square. And to think, what if we did this? And those are sort of questions as a teacher I'd ask. And of course, now in adult life, in more mature life, as the professor said, you never stop growing up and developing as an artist. And I have found that I've had those reasons to want to delve more into the creative process to find something that really works for me, but also impacts on other people. Probably rambled on past that question.
No, that's good. It's good. Keep going.
So basically, when in 2015 I retired, I thought, this is good, and I thought all the things I should do. And it's funny enough, I didn't have enough spark, motivation, if you like, to create much artwork. So I thought, oh, yeah. Then, but it's a funny thing that in 2017, when I found out that I was sick, it was a catalyst for me thinking, geez, life's so precious. I can't accept this. I've got to think positive and think, yeah, I'm going to get past that. But more importantly, every day was an important thing. I made a point of saying, let not one day be the same as the next, because then you get into a rut. And I guess that positive drive to not do the same thing completely gave me time to think about how I could improve my art. And of course, when COVID came in, And the chemo, look, I actually had chemo in 2018 after having my colon, part of my colon removed in 2017 at the end of the year. And then finally I had problems with other areas of my body. I had the chemo and I thought, yeah, I'm good. And I started to have more in the paint. But when COVID came in 2019, whatever it is.
2020.
I had more time to think because it was lockdown. What are you going to do? How do you remain sane? So going for walks was good because you're getting into joy, fresh air. And I realised even in 2017 when I had the shock of hearing I had cancer, walking was a great therapy for me because of outdoors, breathing fresh air and looking around and giving myself distractions, not focusing on, oh, what am I going to do? I'm buggered. In fact, I've never accepted that. I guess some of my negativity I still have, but I know that, Leanne, you were you should be credited to that person somehow turned off a certain part of my brain that who focused too much on negatives. And so breathing, going for walks, I thought, this is good. I'm going to feel good about myself. And when the lockdown, well, I could walk a bit outside, but I wanted to paint. I had to do something to keep sane. And I found that my painting style techniques evolved into something beyond what I thought I could do.
Why do you think that is? You think just because you had time to play around and just experiment, no judgment, you know, like I have to get this artwork done by a certain time, you know, all the time in the world in lockdown?
Yeah, it was that too, all the time. But I realised that everything I do is now going to be precious because I don't know in the real game of things how long I have to enjoy this world. And so creating something, trying to push what I did. In fact, I went from a stage where in early days it might take me weeks to paint. I could now do a painting in 90 minutes. I think actually I did one painting in 20 minutes and it was bloody good because when you realise time is the essence, it's important to get something down quickly. Don't put off, oh, I'm going to do it eventually. And I think that's probably something that has been instilled with me over the years, even before I finally had cancer, that there is no point dwelling about, yes, I'm going to do it. Better to do it and feel relieved that you've done it than have it bothering your head and think, oh, I've got to do that. Because you don't sleep very well when you've got these things going around your head. So I think that all made me realise that I've got to get it done but feel good about it. And I guess exploring photographs of animals, because that was always my interest area when I was a kid, doing animals. And when I went to art school in 74, I had a lot of artists that were there around me giving advice, but it was interesting enough. It was an abstract expressionist, Alex Butler, who turned the button, turned the keys, and brought out something in me that was incredible as opposed to the other artists who were more focused on their style rather than helping me develop mine. And I think that was something that I brought through in my teaching of kids, is to find out what style of art they felt best with and then try and find artists that related to what they did.
So oh, that was our childhood, right? I'd do something and go, oh, that's so much like a Van Gogh, or that's so much like a Kandinsky.
Because then they realise, oh, I don't do it like a photograph. You don't have to. Look at Matisse. Not a photograph, but you can still enjoy it. Look at Picasso. Look at Cezanne, who just distorts the viewpoints and gives something quite acceptable and beautiful and realistic, but not in the rigidness of the great masters who only painted like a photograph. They just paint so realistically. And I think that was something which I've tried not to bother me. I'm not painting what the photograph says. The photograph is a stimulus to paint what I feel. Mm. And I think Vincent van Gogh was one who I think instilled in me a lot because he was about painting what was in here, what he felt. And, yeah, what he saw, but it was still a personal approach to it. And I think that was something that helped me with my art, to try and find out what I was about because I had a cousin who said to me, Gary, you did some nice artwork, but I want to see what you can do. Let me see your style, your technique.
Don't just copy something.
Don't just copy things. I mean, I looked at Brett White and I love his work because he was inspired by Vincent van Gogh. And I feel this connection, of course, of Vincent van Gogh having a hearing problem, and I do too, would you say? And I love Van Gogh and I love Brett Watley's fluidness of his art. So it was those two artists in particular had an incredible impact on me. anyway, I'm going around circles.
No, and what is it about painting like you like versus sculpture or another form of medium?
Sculpture, it's a very difficult medium because you have to work out from the outside, working your way into the core. You have to, in fact, imagine every layer that you're chiseling away through. Whereas with painting, you start with a base and then you build onto it. So it's like a reverse process. Rather than working from the outer to the core, you work from the core and bring it to the outer. And I found that with painting itself, it's very relaxing. I prefer acrylic paints to oil paints because of bad experiences when I was young, because it tends to not dry so quickly. But acrylic I found was really good and fluid, and you can do all sorts of things with it. And my sister-in-law introduced pouring paint. Although I'd done marbling as a kid, I never thought it as being just purely a craft fun thing. But I've started a new way of combining my realistic style with pouring paint.
That's like the flicking approach, right? It's like the flick or the drip or the...
You drip, you splurt, you blow, you do all sorts of things. It's amazing. It's a very experimental one because you're not using a brush so much as a cup where you're pouring paint. And then, as you say, you're tilting it, or use a straw and blow it, or use a hairdryer. Another good use for hairdryers. Mm-hmm. The trouble is they look very messy after you finish, but blowing paint around so the colour explodes. And that, to me, has been another challenge. It's sort of like Mr. Squiggle. How can I make this into a realistic painting using the explosions of colours on the canvas as a way of doing it? And interesting, too, is I found that one day I thought, gee, black canvas is on special. I should try playing with them. So I did. And my first paint on a black canvas was a painting of a gorilla that was I had photographed at Taronga Park Zoo. And this poor gorilla was trying to be amorous with his missus, and unfortunately the troop disagreed with that. And he was most embarrassed. And just after he was hiding behind a bush, he came out. I photographed him looking rather upset with himself. And it made a great subject for a painting. And that was a silverback gorilla. And then I photographed his missus and his two of his children. And the expressions on their face was intriguing. But working on a black canvas, I thought, this is good, because prior to doing that, I used to pre-paint a canvas the colour so I wasn't distracted by the white. So this experimental thing, you know, trying out different background surfaces as being something that's helped drive me, because I'm trying to make things different, but still within my own style, but just introducing a few more varied techniques. And I guess those challenges gives me something to look forward to the next day or the day after with paint. So it's very therapeutic.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's great for stress relief. Do you have to be like, can you pick up an artwork when you're already stressed, or you have to calm yourself down first? Like, can you just go, oh, I'm angry, I'll go paint? Or do you have to go for a walk first and then you can paint?
Actually, I go to the wine cabinet and get some nice red wine.
And I've got like 200 bowls of unopened wine in that place.
It's very relaxing because it's soothing. The only problem I've had on a few occasions was I use I have my wine in one glass and I have a water, the brush bowl through the brushes, and I stuck the brush in the wrong place.
Used to do that with coffee as well?
As well, because yeah. I actually had a old coffee cup I loved, and the handle broke, and I had the coffee cup there and I had my water, and I forgot which was which, and because the paint water didn't taste very good, but nor did the coffee after the brush had been in it. So I've had to try using different sorts of cleaning containers so I don't put it in the wrong spot.
But can you put one on the left because you're right-handed, one on the left and one on the right?
It's another thing to focus on. Oh, I better make sure I put the brush in the right spot. But it's been a fun experience. I mean,
you didn't do a lot of painting while you were teaching, did you? Like, it was all about teaching others and you didn't do much yourself.
Exactly. In that sense, what happens? The only art I produced was when I was demonstrating to the students, like, this is how you do this in a style of Picasso or style of Matisse or Renoir, whatever it is. I'd create the samples on the board while they're watching and say, okay, let's try that. Let's try and follow these sort of processes. Actually, many years later, I did it with a group of women who were in their middle age, or average age was about 35, and just doing step-by-step painting away. And it was good. But getting back to the children, it was the only artworks I created were the ones I created for the students to look from, to observe. So here's a still life. I'm going to show you the interpretation, how you do it. Or this is how you do the proportions of the face. So, but these artworks, which I think, you know, I was holding on to a long time, I think I may have thrown some of them out because it was, but you know, if you're teaching the same thing to, say, seven different classes, be, say, year seven kids, you can't hold everything to be so precious. But that was the only art I did. Occasionally I might have done something else. So I guess retiring helped me focus on something else.
Having it's like a cancer. Self-discovery thing, right? Like reconnecting with that side of you from 40 years ago.
Well, it was there, just to be woken up. And I've been giving it some advice to my brother, who's a brilliant artist. Two brothers, one sadly passed away. Both of them were brilliant artists. And I've tried to be a stimulus to my second oldest brother and give him confidence in his art. He takes a lot of pride in his work, and I guess I did too. But for me, I was too stuck in a style I didn't like, and that's when I became more fluid with my colours. So the colours just go on there. I don't worry. Actually, the funny thing is I even use the paint for my palette. I don't mean the paint I poured out and paint on. When the paint dries out on the plastic palette, I peel it off and shove it onto the canvas, work into it. It's amazing how incredible it looks. But just another way of pushing, trying different techniques to help my art live and take on different directions, but still maintaining the essence of my style, just introducing more techniques.
What do you say to, say, someone who maybe was very artistic as a kid, kind of lost their way, thinking of getting back into it? Because I'm thinking it's got a lot of mental health benefits, right? Like, I know you've been trying to get me to do it, and I've got a paint by numbers, which took me 2 years to open, and now I've done maybe, two little bits in 3 months. What kind of advice do you have to people who, like, do want to get into the creative stuff as a stress release?
I would suggest forget about doing realistic stuff, and I would say go into pouring paint techniques, because you don't know what the end result's going to be like. And if you make a mistake, you just pour paint out of the top and dry it in place, or just scrape the paint off. Pouring paint is brilliant because there's no subject. It's about expressing yourself through colour. I mean, if you think about it, Jackson Pollock, the genius that he was, introduced the idea of spontaneity in art, where you're not conditioned, I have to do it like a photograph. I mean, many a student I would have, would parents would say, look, my daughter or son doesn't paint realistically, so I don't consider them artistic. And I think, gee, that's wrong. But I think, seriously, pouring paint or just doing collage work, playing with things which we're not worrying about the subject, you're just worrying about having fun. The paint by numbers is good for those persons who just like to do that repetition thing, looking at number and painting and adding colour. I personally can't do it because I tried as a young child, and I got frustrated because I wanted to paint a little bit differently. my wife, your mother, is slowly getting into it more and painting, not by numbers so much, but the image is there, and it's just a matter of you applying your own colours, and that's given a lot of self-satisfaction to her. But I think art is a brilliant therapy for helping people relax. And whether you're pouring paint, colouring in shapes, doesn't matter. I mean, who's going to look at it unless you want to look at it? And I think the most important thing is when you get confidence, you want others to look at it, and then you gain more confidence. I think if art can make other people feel good as much as it makes you feel, then that's a wonderful way of helping all the positives, you like, help you and others. It's when you say, I can't do this. Well, it's all negative, isn't it? And you'll convince yourself that you can't do it. It's like with anything in life. If you keep on telling yourself you can't do it, you'll believe it. So I know you probably told me a few of those.
Like, I swear I've said that at some point. You've been doing painting with my daughters recently. Well, look, not recently. For a while, there's about 30 canvases are now painted on, and I don't know what to do with. And you're even seeing they've got different styles. I mean, I know probably the older one's more like, I can't do this in general stuff, but I know with the art, she's going at her own pace and having a lot of fun with it. And it's, yeah, great bonding time with their poppies. So they'll be home from school soon and expect to do some painting time again and finish off their latest artwork. But I know they've really enjoyed that.
I think because art, it can be mathematical. In fact, they say people who are mathematical would be great musicians, because part of the mathematical part of your brain, I think, focuses on everything has to be in its place.
Yeah.
Everything has to be tidy, perfected, and so forth. Then there's the right side of the brain that's a bit more experimental. And with your daughters, as I say, they just show the different aspects of their brain as working at their art. One is more about expressing, one's more about portraying in a way that sort of the others can say, oh, yeah, that's that, without them having to think. It's just different approaches. And that's what art's so beautiful about it. What is beautiful about art, because it's not one style. If everyone painted the same style, it'd be like we were all ancient Egyptians painting in the same style. We all dictate we must do, the person or figure in a certain way. We're not. We're free-spirited. And I think that's thanks to some of the great modern masters who introduced this free-spirited way of portraying things, not worrying about what others do, but do what you want to do. And your children are fantastic at just trying out different things. And your niece, as I say, she's 82 and she's started to show confidence in the way she just plays the paint, using two hands perhaps at times. It's wonderful because they produce something and that piece that they produce can live forever unless you decide, paint over it.
I want to ask you about going to art galleries for those who may not want to do it themselves but still appreciate art. We were taken, I usually use the word dragged, but I'll say taken to many art galleries growing up. And you know what? It was always very tranquil, just like looking at art. I mean, yeah, my husband totally hates it because I think he's like, what's the point? But I mean, what are your tips for, maybe just people being introduced to the art gallery world?
I'd say to them, we're going to do some time traveling. We're going to see how the world was before now. And let's see how artists portrayed that world and look at the different ways they did portray it and sort of trying to say, what do you think the life was like in that time? Why did they paint boldly? Why are things distorted? What were the things that caused it? So, in fact, you can give like a history lesson related to the artworks. And I think if you say, look, we're going to look at things. Some things you might want to look at longer. That's great. Let's look at them and discuss what you like about them. I mean, personally, there are some artworks where you think, what was the point of that? Many years ago when I was at art school, we had to go to Newcastle to see this exhibition of an Italian artist. I won't be blasphemy and say his name. But when we got there, I was looking for the artworks I was supposed to admire. All I could see is these white canvases that were slashed. And I said, what happened to the artwork? They said, that's the artwork. And I thought, oh, okay. So as an art teacher, I have to take this on board and say to the kids, oh, look, don't judge it. Just think about what was the process, what made them do it. And I thought, well, what a crock. But unfortunately, you do have artworks like that and people think, oh, that's rubbish.
It's the meaning behind it. It was the emotion of the anger of, yeah.
Exactly. And, of course, art should be a whole lot of things, not just simply it's a picture of what you see. It should be more than that. And I think that, it's good if people don't like certain things. That's good. That means they're getting an opinion. You want kids to develop an opinion about things and not just accept, I've seen some Archibald Prize winners who I think, really? But there's some others that have meaning and they're well executed. And I think
that's the thing, because they're not just a replica of the person. They've tried to maybe go too far beyond the box, but they're trying to, mix it up.
But, explore their world as they see it. And I guess, that's what it's all about. Children coming tonight, just say it's something different. Have a look at it. So what you like? Maybe there's something like it you might want to try doing yourself at home.
Yeah, you can go on, you can look off Pinterest and see what kind of artworks. I mean, you can go to a craft shop to just pick up canvas and paints and go, all right, I'm just going to do something and not put any judgment on it. Just go, all right, I'm just going to put, brush to canvas and just see what happens. And worst case scenario, you just paint over it or no one ever sees it. But just getting that out, yeah, would be awesome. Oh,
of course. I mean, a lot of the Argos have little education kits that you can pick up, and they give the opportunity for the child to explore, looking for the painting which has a grape in it, or a banana hanging from the sky, or whatever it is, or an apple over a person's head. and they have to look for these things, and while they're looking for those things, they're seeing other things as well. Yes. So it becomes an exploration, a form of detective work. But that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Exploring what artists did and what were they trying to say? What happened to them, maybe?
Anything else you want to just add in terms of how art has helped you through the last, 5 years with your cancer journey?
Well, it's made me realise that there's a limit to how much wall space I've got. I've produced a lot of artworks, and it's funny, I've become so not selfish, but my artworks are my babies, and I want to sort of keep them all around me. But the problem is, my wife, your mum, doesn't really want to have them stuck to the ceiling. So it's given me motivation to produce the artworks and also pass them on.
Let's do that. I know someone who's good at marketing. Let's.
Yes, it. Because I still like to think there's at least 30 years in me to produce artworks and to be a great grandparent and great grandparent as well as a parent. And my house won't take it. Although the walls and floors, I don't really want to go into the bathroom and in the laundry.
Back of the doors gives people something to think about.
Well, when they're having great thoughts, that's exactly. My artworks are explored even the outside brick walls of the house. That's dangerous. So I know I have to, of course.
Well, then maybe selling it, then that's kind of the next focus, because I know, like, just throughout, I guess from you, can't really sit still, need to stay occupied. So then this is the next thing to kind of focus on. And
marketing my work. Yeah, I've been going to various zoos and thinking, how can I get them to sell my art? And I know it's complicated. There's a lot of politics involved.
Yeah.
But there has to be a way, at least get them out, not for selfish reasons. I mean, a bit of money would be nice to get for them, but just to have them out there for others to enjoy. I mean, I have passed artworks on to family and friends because I know they've enjoyed a particular artwork, and I think, I'd rather be hanging up on their wall than stuck behind a lounge chair, on the wall or the ceiling,
Yeah. All right, I'll help you with that. We'll make that happen. And so I always ask my guests these questions. And the first one is, how do you look after your health and wellness?
I wake up and I go to sleep at night. And when I wake up, I say, thank you, I'm alive. And I make a point of making sure I get a walk, hopefully. And I have something in the day that I can think, yep, that was great. I enjoyed that day. Being the positive, rather than say, I've got cancer, I won't go anywhere, I won't travel anywhere because I'm sick. And of course, that really won't help me get better. So I've adopted the idea that you wake up, you make a great day of it, no matter what it is, give it character. Make every day count and pass as many positives to your family and friends. Help people as much as you can and feel good about it and enjoy life. But you only have one life, and I think it's good to make best of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. And I've had, my sister-in-law had even commented once that you were the most positive person she knew, and I'm like, oh, what, really? Because it's been fairly recent. But definitely you've been your most positive throughout your cancer journey, which is kind of ironic, but that's when you're kind of reassessing. So, well, I could complain about this, or I look on the bright side and push forward and be thankful for what I have and what's good.
Exactly, and people can't get over I've got cancer because but you look good. Yeah, I'm a bit rotund. I'm in shape, but...
Round is a shape.
But people say you're incredible even when people just speak to. And they say, I might mention I've got cancer. But
they expect cancer, they think, weak.
Yeah, you can't. You just say, I've got something. It's a bug. It's a pain in the butt or whatever it is. But I just think it might be a bad nightmare. But I think I'm here to enjoy life. I'm not going to give in to this thing. I'll put up with the chemo. I mean, this is my third year of treatment. I had in 2018, 2021, and now 2022. And I'm hoping if I have to have chemo every year for the next 30 years, or maybe within 30 years, they may have found a better way of treating it. but I'd rather be above than below.
Yeah.
And
And I know you have an Instagram account because, yes, someone set that up for you. So, yes, so your artworks can be found. It's just Gary Belenfant, isn't it? I'll put that in the show notes. So anyone who wants to look up your artworks and potentially buy them, we'll put a link in the show notes. Any other ways people can connect with you? I think that's probably the best way to reach out by Instagram.
Yes, because please, my wife doesn't want my paintings on the wall or on the ceiling or in the bathroom. So you can help me and help Leanne because you want him.
Put them in your bathroom. No.
That's your bathroom.
No. Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you, Dad, for coming on the show and sharing your journey about the art world and how I think, you've listened to this and you've never really got into art or you did as a kid and you kind of lost it along the way. It's not too late to start again. Like, Dad barely did much while he was teaching, like you said, and he's got back into it. And if you are still, still working, got a young family, get them involved, like we're saying with the kids. Have a whole art day and don't just go, oh, I'll give the kids something to do and I'll go do the dishes. Do paint with them. And, whether it's the splattering or the painting or the whatever you want, or collage, which I used to like as well.
Finger painting's good.
Finger painting, yes. Yeah, get messy. Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed having you on the show today.
Thank you, Leanne.
And thank you, dear listener, for tuning in. You can find show notes for the episode at marketingandme.com.au. If you enjoyed listening, please subscribe and leave me a rating or review via Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice, and grab a screenshot of this episode and share it across your socials to get the message out there. If you're interested in connecting with me, feel free to reach out via LinkedIn. Just search for Leanne Shelton and let me know you're a fan of the show. You can also find me on Instagram under LeanneShelton247. Book in a free 15-minute chat, because I'd absolutely love to chat about how I can help you grow a thriving health and wellness business. Until next time, I wish you good health and good wealth.